I mean, we can sit around all day and just wait for longevity to help us build that strong relationship, but that's wasting time. There are a couple of things I would absolutely recommend. And I get that when you're taking on a new executive and you want to hit the ground running, and so you get yourself really quickly immersed in work, in tasks, and that will show your willingness and your eagerness to roll your sleeves up and get work done, which is great. Tick that box. But I do believe there's absolutely so much merit in taking some time to do two particular things.
That's Sally Foley Lewis, an Australian treasure who also happens to be an expert on productivity and leadership skills, including delegation. My name is Anna McDonald, and as an assistant who has run the gamut of feeling painstakingly bored to completely stressed out by a micromanager, I learned pretty quickly that delegation can make or break an assistant's work performance and happiness in their role. In this episode, I ask Sally your burning questions about the why, what, and how of delegation and working with different types of executives. Hello, and welcome to the Ambitious Admin Podcast. I'm your host, Anna McDonald, CEO and founder of the Ambitious Admin. I help new corporate assistants hit the ground running by taking a proactive approach to their skill development and building the confidence to bring their whole, authentic, dynamic, powerful selves to work. The goal of this podcast is to give you the support and guidance that is so often missing for the role of administrative professional and provide a space where you can feel heard, understood, and appreciated. Now, let's get to the new episode. Are you a new assistant who wants to hit the ground running and get a firm handle of the what, why, and how of your role? Snag my free course on how to be a good assistant and shine in your first 90 days. This free course covers what questions to ask in your first 90 days, what routines to establish, how to get organized with Microsoft OneNote, the top hard skills to develop, and the top soft skills to develop, as well as things I wish I knew when I started as an assistant. And it includes bonus materials, including a customizable executive support summary, a recommended book list, and a morning mindset worksheet. Head on over to theambitiousadmin.com to enroll for free. Welcome, Sally.
Thank you, Anna.
So let's take a moment to chat about your accolades because you are such an inspiration. You have been in the biz for 20 plus years, coaching and speaking to leaders about productivity and leadership skills. You've been a manager, you've been a CEO. You were the 2020 recipient of the Stevie International Business Gold Award for Female Entrepreneur of the Year. I'm not done yet. The Professional Speakers Australia 2020 Breakthrough Speaker of the Year, voted onto the 2018 LinkedIn Top Voices list, and a certified specialist in so many areas. I don't want to take away from any of them, but there are just so many of them. But on top of all of this, Sally, you are just a wonderful human being and
No.
have so generously agreed to be my guest today. So, Sally, thank you so much for joining.
I absolutely love hanging out with you. And you know what? Of all those accolades, the last one was the best.
Oh.
To know that you actually resonate with someone, I think, that's top of the list for me. So thank you.
So today we're talking all about delegation and how to work with different types of executives. And this is just such an important topic for assistants because there is no one executive assistant relationship that is like another. It is truly a balancing act, especially for assistants who work with multiple executives. It's really hard to balance that and work with all of those different personalities and needs and work styles. So from the standpoint of a manager or exec, because I think it's really important as assistants that we understand this, what are the top three reasons or feelings or beliefs that make it difficult for an executive to delegate responsibility?
Oh, only three.
We'll be here all night, folks.
That's right. Settle in, kids. We're going to be here for a while. No, I think there's a fairly significant list of reasons why executives won't delegate. And it could be that they do a very quick environmental scan and they think everyone's too busy. They don't know what to delegate. They don't know who to delegate to. They don't have a clear picture in their head about understanding authority and responsibility, because if they hand over a task, who gets the blame? If they hand over a task, who gets the credit? You know, those sorts of issues. They might say that they've delegated in the past and it's backfired, so they're not doing that again. And so they're probably the surface level reasons, and they're all valid. I will never argue them with anyone, ever. They're absolutely valid. And then when we come down a little bit, then we get into the feelings. And it's a fear of failure. It's a fear of being caught out. It's a fear of being seen as being incompetent. It's a fear of them not looking like a good leader. It's a fear of not being able to have any sense of control over the situation, and everything's out of control, and a fear that they don't trust people to do it right or do it to their standard or do it in the time frame that they want it. And so there's a lot of reasons that are given which are very rational and very valid sounding reasons. And to me, I think they are quite valid. They're based on something, and the evidence is out there, because so many managers and executives don't delegate. And then they're driven by the fears, which are just as valid as well. I mean, no executive that I work with ever starts delegating until we've addressed the reasons why they don't delegate. And that's based on their past experiences, their beliefs, and their absolute feelings of fear. So, yeah. So lots and lots there, more than three.
Yes. And it sounds like a big part of that is that fear is maybe a lack, and to nobody's fault, I think, to your point, it's typically pretty valid, but it's a lack of trust in the person to whom they're delegating, whether that's justified, or like you said, it's a history of something that had happened in the past, or it's just their own insecurity or fear. But what are a couple ways that an assistant can build trust with their executive, especially when they're new? How can we approach a situation in a way that exhibits trustworthiness aside from just time in the role? Of course, that's important, but how can we expedite that process?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I mean, we can sit around all day and just wait for longevity to help us build that strong relationship, but that's wasting time. There are a couple of things I would absolutely recommend. And I get that when you're taking on a new executive and you want to hit the ground running, and so you get yourself really quickly immersed in work, in tasks, and that will show your willingness and your eagerness to roll your sleeves up and get work done, which is great. Tick that box. But I do believe there's absolutely so much merit in taking some time to do two particular things. And the first one is to observe your executive in a couple of meetings. And what you're doing, even on a Zoom or a Teams meeting when it's online these days, just be a more observant of what your executive is doing, the way they communicate, who they're communicating with more than others, what's their sense of humor, how's their language, is it formal, informal, how are they making decisions, do they go down into the detail, do they stay up on the higher level. Do a scan of your executive for the first few meetings. And it might mean that if you're having to take minutes, or you're having to be the note taker or be in some other supportive role during that meeting, this is going to take a bit of work. So if you can, record the meeting, but really observe your executive. And I want you to be like one of those machines that scans you at the airport. Actually, remember airports? Like, you really want to do an analysis on your executive. So that's the first activity I would highly recommend.
And yes, that's a great tip.
And you don't really need anything other than, look at their communication style in your own language. You know, you can define it as you wish. No one's going to see that little report you make for yourself, that audit. But really drill down into who is your executive to you. The second activity, and it depends on where you feel safe and how confident you are, but I highly recommend actually booking time with the executive and sitting in there one-on-one and saying, I would like to spend this really short period of time us getting to know each other and actually talking about how our relationship can get stronger quicker, and actually state the bleedingly obvious, you know. Because to some degree, it might be not many executives are going to hear that, number one, but they're also going to probably be grateful because you've actually taken the initiative to say, I want us to have a good relationship. I don't want to waste time in trying to work you out. How about we sit down and say, you tell me how you like to work. I'll tell you what I like to do. And together we'll work out the processes. And if we start doing this now, sooner, then we get over any hurdles, which we will have, quicker and actually smoother down the run. And so the conversation could be simply about, how often do we meet? How do I preempt some things for you? What are some of the things that have happened in the past where you have wanted someone to actually know this or preempt this and they haven't? So what is that? You know, ask your executive to call upon past hiccups and past successes to give you information. They're the two big
absolutely.
Activities.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Sally. I couldn't agree more, especially with sitting down and creating that open line of communication. Actually, in my Tips to Shine in Your First 90 Days starter course, I talk about the importance there of having that open line of communication, asking about their work style, their communication style. And I totally understand that that can be intimidating and uncomfortable or give you that sort of butterfly feeling, especially if you're new. Mm. But it's just so important. And to your point about showing that you realize how important it is and you are willing to take that initiative and take control of that and make it obvious that you know how important it is. I couldn't agree more.
Can I add to that? I think one of the things about the butterfly pieces, and I get for some people, it would take a lot for them to actually do that. And I do understand that. So all I would say to those of you who are sitting there going, never say never, and take a deep breath and start with your intention. And your intention is to create a trusting bond with your executive, and you can walk in and actually say those words. My intention is to create a trusting bond with you really quickly so we can get good work done even faster. And what the knock-on effect of that is, when that starts to flow, it might not be immediately, but it will be quicker than if you don't do it, your opportunity to take on things that they will delegate to you, and you'll get more opportunities from it.
I couldn't agree more. That's just gold. And you may be the first assistant who ever does that with that executive. So just think about the trust already that you'll be able to build there. Now let's kind of shift gears here and talk about a really unfortunate and popular topic among assistants and their executives, and that is micromanagement. And we touched upon a little bit in the beginning about the difficulty of some managers to delegate, but what are some practical ways that assistants can address a micromanagement situation? Because it can be extremely difficult to approach this type of manager, and in a sense, we don't want to stir the pot. We don't want to tell them they're a micromanager without some practical ways to remediate it. So is there a way to let them know in a professional manner that they are micromanaging unnecessarily?
Yeah, definitely. And again, the strategies that we talk about today, they might work today, but not work tomorrow. So we're talking about human beings. So I think always keep trying different things. And you're absolutely right. To tell a micromanager they're micromanaging is a CLM, a career limiting move. So we don't want to do that. And with that regard, I know a lot of executives and, you know, well, a lot of assistants and a lot of people, when they've got a micromanager in their midst, they avoid them. They run away from them. They do everything they can to spend the least amount of time with that micromanager. And my question is then, what do you think the micromanager then does when they pick up on that?
Overcompensates.
Yeah, they go through the roof on their micromanaging. So, and my question that goes a bit deeper again is, what do you think is driving that micromanagement? You know, and where's it coming from? Where's the stress and the pressure on that executive that is creating this person, that is causing this person or triggering this person to be a micromanager? And so some empathy on our part is really valuable as an assistant, and looking deeper as to what's driving it. And then I would actually encourage the assistant to lean in rather than avoid. And one of the things that I've done in the past, particularly with executive assistants, is that when they've done my delegating workshop, we say, do the workshop so you understand what the process, the proper process of delegating is, so that when your micromanager comes to you, you're leaning into that conversation just as hard as they are, and you're actually going through the structure that they should be going through. And what happens is there's this tipping point. You're asking all these questions of the executive, and the executive's going, oh, they're engaged. They really want to know. They're understanding. They're asking me the questions that I need to be answering. They're actually fulfilling all my needs. My assistant gets me. I can breathe a little bit. And so when you lean in and you actually give more information, when you lean in and ask deeper questions, when you lean in and go another layer deeper, your executive is going to feel a sense of relief that someone is on their side. So I do really recommend, as much as you want to run for the hills, run toward, not away.
Yeah. And it makes sense because, as you said, that fear of delegation is mostly from the executive side, you know? So to have the assistants take that initiative and show them that they can be trusted and can be leaned upon can take some of that fear away. Because wouldn't you say micromanagement comes from that fear of delegation, that fear of letting go, the fear of trusting?
Mm. Yeah, a lot of managers who micromanage rather than properly delegate are doing it because they haven't got a structure, they haven't got a process, and they've essentially gone and dumped a task on someone and then in their own inexperience realize that they've handed over control and there's no clarity, there's no foundation, there's no support structure that's been agreed between the manager or the executive and the delegatee, the receiver of the delegation. So when you learn to delegate properly and you have a structure, it happens quicker, it happens with less issues. There's an agreed framework that you have and an agreed follow-up and milestone tracker that you have. And it actually ramps up the right type of control and dampens down the out of control.
And so much of this has to do with personalities. Would you agree with that? We all bring our own twist, our own baggage, our own history into work. And sometimes that's a great thing, the thought of bringing your whole self to work, but it also can be difficult to work with other personalities. So do you recommend that assistants do something like a DISC assessment when they are new to figure out the best way to communicate and work with their executive? And maybe we should back up a little bit. What does the DISC stand for in the DISC assessment? What are the four categories?
Yeah. So, you know, dominance, influence, steadiness, and conscientious. So, you know, they're quite self-explanatory in their styles when you do look at them. And DISC, for dominance, they're high level, they're decision makers, they get on with it, just do it. Influencers are the peacocks, you know, they're the ones that are on show and love to be social and it's all about me. The steadiness ones are like the doves of peace. They like to know that everything and everyone is okay. And then they're conscientious ones are that everything is right. So they're our perfectionists. So that is a very abridged version of it. So I apologize to the creators of this. But yeah.
But I think that's helpful. And even if listeners haven't heard of a DISC assessment or they've heard of it and didn't really know what it was, I think it's helpful to understand the four categories. Mm-hmm. And even that little tidbit is helpful to start identifying where they may fall, where their executive may fall.
Oh, absolutely. I love DISC. And the other one I would recommend is doing motivators as well. And so I'm happy to help anyone with that if they want to come through you. The reason why I would highly recommend this is because even if you're just doing the DISC for yourself, as you go through that learning process around what the profile means and what the four styles, the D, the I, the S, and the C stand for, and the idiosyncrasies of each of those, you can plot yourself and you'll be able to plot your executive and other people, other players in this game of life. And from that, you then learn, okay, well, if I am a high, I don't know, I influencer and I am like a raving peacock, you know, that's my style. And I like to be like Oprah or a little bit of Sally, you know, just so. But then you're dealing with someone who is a high S, you're almost opposites in a lot of ways. So what you can do when you realize this, you actually step back and you think, oh, they've got skills and abilities that I don't have. All of a sudden I can appreciate rather than be frustrated by. And I think that just makes for far better working relationships, and it actually helps both of you to understand each other and then also rely on each other's strengths rather than just be frustrated by any differences. And especially for assistants and executives, if you do DISC or motivators in the first little while of understanding and spending time with your executive, I think the next thing from them would be an emotional intelligence type of profiling tool, because that would just go deeper and actually help build that relationship even stronger. You know what? You could even ask your executive if they've done any leadership profiling or personality profiling, and if they would be okay that you had a look at it as another addition to learning their style and getting their perspective on it. You know, and it'd be interesting, because I know this has happened in the past where an assistant asked the executive if they had done a DISC profile before, and the executive pulled the report off the shelf and threw it and said, oh, here's that rubbish. And so not only did that give the assistant some insight into the executive, but then you also know exactly what the executive thought of it. So that to me is just even extra gold on top. You know, you get those insights. Don't ever miss those moments.
Oh my gosh, too funny.
Look, I think at the end of the day, you've just got to ask, when you're trying to work people out, you know, is it someone who wants to get it done, they want to get it right, they want to be acknowledged for it, or they just want to be loved themselves? You know, they want their work to be appreciated, or they want themselves to be acknowledged. So, you know, it's back to just trying to work people out. Take that time to try and understand people and pick the differences, pick the similarities, appreciate the differences as strengths.
That's great. But to your point, I absolutely recommend doing that assessment, and Sally can help you with that, and maybe even with your executive. Yep. Now, as we wrap up here, when thinking about delegation, the partnership between an executive and an assistant, do you have any other recommendations as far as that relationship, delegating between the two, and the overall health of the working relationship?
Absolutely. So that's where, you know, I've said before, when I've worked with executive assistants and actually taken them through the delegation workshop so that they understand the steps, because if their executive doesn't know how to do it, they almost reverse engineer the delegating on their executive. So they make sure all the gaps are filled. And what I would recommend is that if your executive hasn't set in any follow-up dates with you, then you ask for those dates in the calendar and put them into follow-up. If your executive hasn't told you very clearly their expectations of what success looks like in this particular task or project, then ask. If your executive hasn't told you what resources you're allowed to utilize, then ask. If your executive hasn't told others that you're doing this particular task, then maybe have a conversation around that so that you are ensuring that your executive doesn't become the bottleneck, because everyone goes to the executive on that particular thing, except you're the one doing it. And so, you know, everything gets stalled because others don't know. I think also when the task is done, you might want to also, you know, this could simply be a 5-minute meeting, but actually say, are you happy with how it went? What are the lessons? These are the lessons that I learned in doing this. Do we want to repeat it this way, or is there some way different that you would prefer in the future? I think we, number one, we don't ever celebrate our successes enough, but number two, we don't breathe and take the lessons. So, you know, you're reverse engineering what the manager should actually be doing, but you're leading the way with that. So I've got a bucket of recommendations, Anna.
Yes, no, it's great. This information is just gold, especially for new assistants, because to your point, a lot of it is taking initiative. And if they're not going to do that, you can do it. There's no reason why an assistant shouldn't take that initiative. And in the end, it actually will help more than it could ever hurt. And I think sometimes our mind gets in our own way of how we plan that conversation to go down. But in the end, you're really helping the relationship more than you could ever hurt it by taking that initiative. You know, it doesn't have to be this push-pull relationship. You can be their partner and their confidant.
Absolutely. One of the things I detest, I get really, really, I don't know if this word translates across our globe, but I get really cranky and angry when
Yes, it does.
Okay, good. When assistants are labeled as simply gatekeepers to the executive, I absolutely hate that, because when a new assistant gets it in their head that they are a strategic business partner with that executive, that is when the rubber hits the road and the pair of you make magic happen. That sounded a bit more like a marriage than anything else, but in some regards, you're going to start to know.
It's very much like a marriage.
Yeah, but that's the thing, you know, as an assistant, if you've got to get it into your head that, and a lot of them do, which is great, but if you're new to this, and I think, you know, no doubt your course, what was it called again, the Tips to Shine. What was the course called?
Tips to Shine in Your First 90 Days.
Oh, that's going to be an awesome course. Anyone who's new has to do it. But I just think that you've got to get it into your head as fast as you can that you are a strategic business partner. You're not less than, you're not better than, you're a strategic business partner. I think that's absolutely critical.
Yep. Yep. I absolutely agree. Well, Sally, this was such a great conversation. It's such a pleasure to have you. We have only scratched the surface of delegation and the importance of the relationship and the trust between an executive and assistant. So I'm sure that I will have you back in the near future to talk more about leadership and delegation. So thank you so much for being on today. And like I mentioned previously in the episode, if you are interested in doing a DISC assessment with Sally, please shoot me a message and we will get you hooked up with the Sally Foley Lewis. Have a great day.
Thank you, Anna.
As you heard earlier, one episode is only enough to barely scratch the surface on this topic and the discussion around delegation with your executive. You've heard what an amazing resource Sally is, so I encourage you to go find her on Instagram. Her handle is @SallyFL. And as you've heard, she is just a delight and also full of knowledge. On the next episode, we'll be diving into the must-do routines for new assistants. These are so, so important to help get you out of that state of chaos that's so common when you're new. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I know you have many, many options out there and only a finite amount of time, so the fact that you chose to spend 30 minutes with me today means so much. Until the next episode, be brave, be kind, be you. This is Anna McDonald, and I'll see you next time.